What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome on into the Lineup Logic Podcast, the daily fantasy podcast bringing you lineup construction ideas for the DFS slate to come on FanDuel. I'm your host, Sean Kane, coming at you Monday following week six. We got the week six recap podcast, as well as some interesting things that I want to talk about as, you know, three truths and three lies here. I want to go over some things that are standing out and try to sort through whether or not they're true. We should be worried, you know, all that kind of noise, like real or fake, you know, that type of thing. Hey, want to give a shout out to some new people on Patreon. Welcome aboard to new patrons. People are adding themselves all the time. Great to have you guys aboard, getting a cheat sheet. The one thing I want to say that I think is probably becoming the most valuable resource to patrons is the lineup show. Walk through two various different lineups in cash game formats on DraftKings and on FanDuel. Both profitable lineups. I mean, you know, I think the visual learning experience of going through the lineup show is really important. And patrons, if you're not checking out the lineup show, that live stream, really valuable. And you know, and then as far as GPP stuff is concerned, I think the thing that we have, there's just so many good little nuggets of information that come out every single week. I mean, week five, it was, don't forget Nelson Agholor and Torrey Smith. Week six, it was Le'Veon Bell is the squeaky wheel that's going to get the grease. You know, stuff like that that we talk about in conversational passing after a week full of research from Josh, myself, Joe, Ryan, all of these guys. You know, there's so much to go with there during the lineup show that really is useful. So if you're interested, get in there, patreon.com/lineuplogic. If you haven't written a review for the podcast, honestly, it's the best way to help the show that you can. On iTunes, where you subscribe, write a review there. It's incredibly useful. Or retweet the podcast when it comes out. It's just really helpful to kind of spread the love. Want to jump in here to a couple things that we learned from week six. So here we go. We're going to go into three truths and three lies, and then we'll go through the recap before we get to the rest of the week of NFL. Wait, sorry. Was going to jump in. Just remembered one other thing that I was supposed to do that I didn't make a note of. NBA content. I'm getting a lot of questions. Sean, when's the NBA content coming back? Not this week. I know the season starts tomorrow, but the DFS slates are going to be kind of hard to sort through. I would not also mind, as a person who plays NBA DFS, taking a week off and getting three, four different games on the board for a couple of these teams to see who's getting actual minutes. I mean, if we know that minutes and starting rotations are the most useful thing, then I don't want to necessarily jump in until I see exactly who's getting what in these rotations. So I'm okay, you know, just from a strategic standpoint, fading the first week of NBA and then saying, okay, now I see the minutes. Okay, here we go. Let's use this information to our advantage. So that is where we're at with NBA content. It will probably begin and be 2 days a week when I'm not doing NFL content. So hopefully Mondays and Fridays, you'll get an NBA podcast breakdown. And, you know, and then we'll do the NFL content in the middle of the week there, like we've been doing. So hopefully that's useful to you guys. It's about me maxing out my minutes with the stuff that I'm writing as well. So that will be me maxing out my minutes, trying to make sure you bring you as much content as possible. With all that in mind, now let's go into the week six recap. All right, so three truths, three things that I really actually do believe are true fantasy related. One, Saints are back. Yeah, this team's good. This team's really good, and they're really good on both sides of the ball. That's the biggest difference. You know, they hung a 50 burger on the Lions. Three of those were defensive touchdowns. And I don't know how many of you guys saw the Marshawn Lattimore interception, but it was absolutely insane. He bumped a route. He comes in, he bumps a route. It's a real inside route. Stafford sees the receiver gets on the inside of Lattimore, and Lattimore is kind of behind him, and he runs around the receiver, and his back is to Matthew Stafford, and he reaches out and catches the ball as if he was in a position of a wide receiver, turns around, brings it to the house. The Saints defense has some pieces. They have some young pieces, and they've been really, really good. Stafford was brutal, though. I mean, he really forces the ball. He really takes some risks, which actually got them back into the game, but also three interceptions were all pick sixes, took five sacks to try and make some plays. It just weren't going to happen, but also some insane throws. The catch by Marvin Jones in the corner of the end zone in the third quarter was mind-blowing. That guy has a lot of talent, and when Golden Tate goes down, Marvin Jones is going to be the man for this offense. The Saints are a really, really nice fantasy target. Why? They can score quickly. And that's going to lead the opposite team to have plenty of fantasy opportunity. Ingram, Kamara, both viable. No doubt about it. Obviously, we saw Ingram get plenty of volume. I think that's more volume than we're normally going to get to see. It's not 26 touches is not normal for him, but I think you can easily see, plus the targets, right? He had like 30 total touches last week. I think it's more likely that you're going to see Mark Ingram probably land in the 22 range on a weekly basis, you know, 18 carries, five targets, receptions, things like that, whereas Kamara is going to be in the 8 to 11 range. So a nice stretch coming up for them as well. They get the Packers, the Bears, and the Bucks, and then the Bills kind of bring that to a screeching halt, and they have, you know, some other tough spots with the Panthers on their schedule, but three really nice matchups with that offense. So we are going to be thinking Saints for their next couple weeks in DFS. Second thought, Melvin Gordon is the leading pass catcher on the Chargers, could be the leading pass catcher on the Chargers. He could also lead all running backs in receiving yards. I think this could be really, really true. I really do. This is a prediction, but this is insane. This trend of what they're doing is basically making every down a passing down, and rather than actually running the ball with Melvin Gordon, they're throwing the ball. And they're completely neutralizing the blitz. Rivers is totally comfortable getting the ball out to Gordon ASAP. He's not going to lead receivers in yards. He's still behind Keenan Allen in total yards. And his average depth of target is like, you know, almost a negative yard because he's catching so many screen passes. But he's second in receptions to Keenan Allen on the team. He had more catches than him two straight weeks. That's really depressing. Not more targets, but more catches. But, you know, it's as far as Allen goes, I think he's going to be about the same number of targets every single week as Keenan Allen. He's going to the problem with the rest of the receivers, Tyrell, Travis Benjamin, and Mike Williams, is they're going to cannibalize each other on the outside. And we know that Rivers is just comfortable taking whatever's given to him. And so automatically you see these interior short targets become his favorite things. And, you know, he takes exactly what's there instantly. And that's Keenan Allen out of the slot, Hunter Henry on the tight end route, and Melvin Gordon out of the backfield. And those are going to be the three leading pass catchers for this team. They're not going to stretch the ball that often. And when they do, it's going to be really hard to predict. So I think that we're looking at these guys, but Melvin Gordon, man, there's a good chance he also leads running backs as a whole in receiving. I mean, he's third right now, and he passed Le'Veon Bell in receptions and targets. And Andre Ellington had zero touches. So, you know, he's going to lead. I saw a stat this morning. He leads all running backs in PPR scoring. He is probably the most valuable running back behind Le'Veon Bell in PPR scoring right now. So no doubt that Melvin Gordon is someone that we have to keep our eye on. And he's got an interesting role. He's got a really, really interesting role. Patriots defense, weekly target. Yes, this is true, 100%. I mean, they allow everyone to score. And let's be very clear. They were losing this game, okay? That was the worst fumble call that has ever been called. It was depressing. I feel bad for Jets fans. You have the right to be pissed off, 100%. That was a great game for the Jets. They could have gone, and they would have won four in a row to cap off a four in a row win streak, possibly. You know, I mean, okay, who knows what happens if that game goes to overtime or whatever the case may be. But what I'm saying is the ASJ fumble call was bullshit. And I'm sorry, Jets fans. you guys are usually pissed off just because, I mean, I guess you're Jets fans, but you have a right to be extra pissed off today because that was a touchdown. And I would have loved to see you beat the Patriots. Patriots can't stop any phase of offense. That's the real problem. They can't stop pass catchers. They can't stop running backs. If teams want to run the ball on them, we've seen it week in, week out. We've seen certain running back schemes be really effective against them. Mediocre running backs be really effective against them. Good running backs, good wide receivers, effective young quarterbacks, bad quarterbacks. It doesn't matter. I mean, Drew Brees lit them up, as did Deshaun Watson and Josh McCown. If everybody is capable of lighting you up in all tiers of quality of quarterback and all tiers of quality of running back, you have a problem. So Patriots are someone we're going to have to target. Upcoming, Falcons, Chargers, and then a bye week. Those are really nice spots. Those are really nice spots. Those games are going to be very high totals, over 50 points for Falcons and Chargers, no doubt in my mind. Three things that I don't believe. I'm not buying it. One, we're done with Julio Jones and the Falcons. Julio has had, you can't be done. And the reason is not that you can't be done. You have to be judicious. You have to be judicious about this because the weeks that you say, I can't do it anymore, I will never roster Julio, that's the week when he's going to go for 160 yards and two touchdowns. You have to be careful. Don't be foolish. Okay. Now, I love Julio this week. I thought for sure that there was a good spot. I have no answers. I'm going to talk about the Miami-Atlanta game. I have no real answers as to what the fuck happened in that game. I really don't. I was watching it. The only thing that I'll talk about it when I get there. Here's the point about Julio, okay? This stretch of touchdowns, this scoreless stretch happens for him. It happens for him in every single fantasy season. It happened in 2014. It happened in 2015. It happened in 2016, but in 2016, it was seven games with just one touchdown. Okay? You know, the problem is that in those games, seven of them he had actually had 100-plus receiving yards when he was scoreless. So the issue is really that Julio's role has never been a scoring role. This isn't Antonio Brown. This isn't A.J. Green. He doesn't have a scoring. This isn't Jordy Nelson. He doesn't have a scoring role in this offense. And the idea that he does, and now all of a sudden he doesn't have one at all, is silly. He's never been a big touchdown guy. He only has like one season with double-digit touchdowns. What we have to respect and understand is this is the guy who takes the top off of the defense. This is their deep threat. These are their wheels. This is their stretch the field man. And he also happens to be one of the biggest, most physical, fastest receivers in the NFL. You know, he's a Mike Evans without the red zone looks, right? And more speed. Mike Evans isn't a good comp because the only reason they're similar is because their frame. Yeah, that's not a good comp. The point being is that he is their depth. Right. I mean, it may seem like it's Taylor Gabriel or something. He is their depth. And you have some interesting, like I said, you have some interesting spots here against the Pats. You have some interesting spots for them against, who was the other one? I forget. But I mean, he is one of the only receivers that is capable of, oh, here it is, Pats, Jets, and the Cowboys and the Bucks upcoming. Go buy Julio Jones. If you want to be aggressive, go buy Julio Jones in your season-long leagues. Be bullish right now on Julio Jones when he is down because he's not going to go all season without scoring a touchdown, and he's not going to go all season with only one 100-yard game. That's not going to happen. It's Julio Jones. And if there's anything that they say this weekend, it's we need to get our best players the ball more often. We need to get Julio the ball more often. We need to get Devonta Freeman the ball more often in order to make plays. That's what I'm thinking. So don't be done. Be smart. Don't be done. Be smart. Two, Adrian Peterson is back. We need to start rostering him. No. He looked great. He looked great. It was a great day to be a 31-year-old guy, 32-year-old guy with him and Larry going ham. I was like, all right, hey, man, we're out here. 30-plus. Let's go. 30-plus club. Don't hate on the dad bod. He was slow, though. I mean, he had a couple really nice chunk plays where, you know, he actually was a threat. And when he gets into space, he's going to be punishing. He knows how to run the football. He's been doing it his entire life. There's good matchups. He's a good goal line back. He knows how to see the field, all that stuff. But I don't expect this game stuff, this to continue. The Arizona offensive line has not been good. They got a little bit more healthy. It must have been nice for them to actually run block for somebody who can run. It's a good feeling, I know, for offensive linemen to be able to actually put their heads down and move the ball downfield and know that they're picking up chunks 5, 6, 15 yards at a time. The biggest person that it benefited was Carson Palmer, and that's the real takeaway here, is that AP may not be a massive fantasy asset, but Carson Palmer and the rest of this offense is going to become more viable on a week-to-week matchup basis, even though their best stretch of their season is over. Going to the Cardinals, this was the last of their really strong part of their offensive season. They're going to get into a rough patch here upcoming, and we're going to have to try to be bearish about them going forward. Because remember, against tough defenses, this team has not been very good, and the Bucs defense is proving to be a problem for them. So I'm not buying AP just yet, but I am buying that it's going to help the balance of the offense, because Palmer's efficiency with him out there was insane. Drop pad. We're done with the Packers without Rodgers. No Packers without Rodgers until further notice. No, I mean, you can't be silly. These are really talented receivers. They're going to find ways to get open. You have to, like Julio, be judicious. It's not going to be an every time they're at home type situation now. But the value of Aaron Jones, Ty Montgomery is high. I think they're going to have to run the ball more often to keep the ball out of Hundley's hands, because he was bad yesterday. He really is. And Jordy and Rodgers definitely have a rapport, but here's what I noticed. Okay. 2013, Rodgers broke the collarbone or the clavicle or whatever, that year. If you remember that, the year that he got tackled in that Bears game, Jordy did drop in total numbers, but he had 85 receptions, 8 touchdowns. That's lower than normal. Normally last year, I think it was like 95 and 14, right? Fine. A lot lower, but he had more receiving yards. So the goal line efficiency is down, but he's still going to get targets. He's still going to get receptions. He's still going to get yards after the catch. The same with Adams. I'll be interested to see who Hundley kind of shakes out as his favorite target. The really weird thing was that they didn't use Jones at all yesterday. And I think McCarthy is going to be the real issue here. If McCarthy tries to keep the same game script as Hundley and Rodgers, it's probably not going to work. So I think that this offense is going to evolve and lean towards the running back. But I don't think you necessarily, you know, banish all of your Packers pass catchers. All right, that's where we're at. That was my three truths and a lie. Let's get into the game-by-game recap. All right, first game of the night, Philadelphia, Carolina. Listen, I'm going to stick to my guns on this one. Fade Thursday Night Football. These teams played terribly. It didn't show up in the box score. You look at the numbers and you go, come on, Sean. I mean, everybody scored 3 touchdowns. They played horrible. Both teams only had 24 and 27% first down rates, well below average. 4 turnovers for total throughout the game. I mean, Carolina averaged 3.9 yards per play. And guys, by the way, I'm just going to go through standout stats basically throughout the week here, trying to give you a sense of what, you know, information stands out here. Carolina, 3.9 per yards per play. Cam rushing the ball 11 times, 6.5 yards per carry. It's because Jonathan Stewart is worthless. Absolutely worthless. Inefficient, old, he's done. They're going to have to start giving McCaffrey the ball more. They're going to have to let Cam rush the ball more because they don't have a running game. It's back-to-back weeks where Stewart has less than 1 yard per carry. He's absolutely terrible. McCaffrey, you know, himself, 14 targets. Kelvin Benjamin, 13 targets. Cam throwing the ball a ton. That's who this offense is going to go through, no doubt about it. You may love Wentz, but listen, Wentz completed only 16 passes. 3 of them went for touchdowns. That's kind of like, you know, unsustainable number, but the reality is neither could be QB completion rate over 54%. Ertz had 2 receptions, both were touchdowns. If there's any reason to think that Zach Ertz is not one of the most valuable fantasy assets in NFL, you're wrong. You're doing it wrong. Guys, my rule is this, and you're always going to hear, if you ever ask me for advice on, hey, who are you playing on the Thursday night slate? I'm going to say fade Thursday night football. Who are you playing on the primetime slate? I'm going to say fade Monday night football. The reason is this. Strategically, it's a different game than the main slate. And we try to play it the same as the main slate. It's not the same. It's hot. It's about winning each position. And you have to basically take a head-to-head approach. Now, at the wide receiver, you have a larger pool. At running back, you have a larger pool. But at four positions in your lineup on FanDuel, right? Four positions in your lineup on FanDuel, you have to make the right decision, basically. Or you have to expect that certain quarterbacks or certain players are going to have the exact same range of outcomes. Because there's such a small pool that the range of outcomes is not as wide. And so you can't pick from a large number of players and try to project them, say that, you know what, there's probably 8 different players based on what I'm seeing here that could get themselves anywhere between 11 to 14 points. There's not on a 4-2 game slate. And so you're trying to do something in the same way that you do a large main slate as you do on a small slate, and it's simply not the same. Now, if you want to do those primetime slate breakdowns, I would listen to the 4-for-4 DFS MVP podcast. Those guys at the end of their main slate breakdowns on Thursdays will usually talk about primetime slates and stuff like that and give you a sense of how they play those slates. It's much different. It's much different. If you're going to ask me for advice, the advice is fade those slates. Fade those slates. I don't like them. Okay, on to Sunday. Chicago, Baltimore. God, I knew Chicago would at least cover. I knew they would cover. Standout stats from this game. Howard, 36 rushes, 176 yards. The man is a beast. If you watch that run that he put on in overtime, the dude has just a lot of power and a lot of balance. It is very difficult to tackle Jordan Howard if you don't do it the right way. He is a great running back. Very fun to watch him. Very fun to be a Bears fan and root for him. Ravens allow rushing yards. I said it. I tweeted about it. The stats thread said it. It was a thing. Imagine if he had gotten in the end zone, man. 176 rushing yards and in a touchdown. He would have been one of the best running back values on the board. Flacco scored 7 fantasy points. Hashtag elite. 31% successful play rate, 20% first down rate. This offense is brutal. Alex Collins led all backs, 15 carries, but he wasn't that much more effective than Buck Allen. Everybody who rostered Buck Allen was going, oh my God, it was Alex Collins. He had one more breakout run, but all in the whole, they both averaged 4.9 yards per carry, and Allen actually had 3 catches for 17 yards. He out-touched him. So it's kind of a committee there now, full on. I think Collins offers the explosiveness that Allen just doesn't have, and Allen offers the hands that Alex Collins doesn't have. But this offense is not something that I'm that interested in. I'm irritated as hell. You know why I'm irritated? Because the Bears gave up 2 special teams touchdowns. This should not have gone to overtime. Those are fluky special team touchdowns, especially the first one. First one was he tripped over his own player, and because he tripped over his own player, everyone presumed that he was down. But because it was his own player, it wasn't forcible contact by the Bears, everyone was like, oh, it doesn't count. And he, you know, what's his name? Former running back from, I think it was from Notre, former running back of Notre Dame, return guy for them. Anyway, no pass catcher in this game exceeded 44 yards receiving. Benjamin Watson led all the pass catchers across the game with only 6 receptions. No Bearcats pass catcher had more than 2 receptions. Don't touch these passing games. Never, ever, ever consider anyone except for the running backs in Chicago and Baltimore. Period. Maybe tight ends. That's it. Zach Miller and Ben Watson were actually useful. Tight ends and running backs in Chicago and Baltimore, that is all we will ever look at. Cleveland, Houston, standout stats. Watson, 12 touchdowns over 3 games, 4 straight weeks with 20 fantasy points. Guys, I'm not going to lie. You heard me hate on Deshaun Watson in the player pod. I know I did. And the only reason I hated on him was because I was pivoting to Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins has an excellent game. So I hope that if you heard my Deshaun Watson hate, it was because you were interested in either Carson Palmer or Kirk Cousins. They did fine for you. Okay, I was not advocating for You know, any crazy hot takes, of course, Jameis Winston I like, but went down. Anyway, point is this. Ultimately, I went with Watson. Why? Because I knew he would be owned at upwards of 60%. He was owned at 58% in cash games. But I didn't want to pair him with anyone except for Ryan Griffin. Ryan Griffin led all pass catchers with 8 targets. I didn't want to touch DeAndre Hopkins. And listen, the DeAndre Hopkins, Jason McCourty thing was real. I'm not gonna lie. I was right about this. He had 19 yards. He had the touchdown. The touchdown is what made his day. But he was up to that point had 2 receptions and 19 yards. Okay, outside of the touchdown reception, he had 2 receptions and 19 yards and 1 touchdown. So he had 1 reception outside of the end zone reception. He is an end zone magnet. It really is impressive. Watch him work in the end zone is really impressive. And he is very good, and him and Watson have a rapport there. I'm not going to try to take that away from them. What I am going to tell you is that the McCourty effect is real. McCourty effect is real, and that's why Fuller went deep, had the big TD early. Because, man, that's what Fuller does. And he had the nice matchup, and he was the one who was able to take advantage of it. But Ryan Griffin was the one that I really wanted. 8 targets. He was only able to catch 4, which is frustrating. But still a decent game for him after the 2-point conversion. And listen, as far as the Cleveland defense goes here, without one, Deontay Foreman had a 50-yard run in which he could have easily scored a touchdown. He ran out of bounds. I don't understand. I was like, Deontay, what are you doing, dog? Just cut back, a little cut. Maybe he ran out of gas. He had a 50-yarder. Cleveland only allowed 50 yards on 26 carries. This rush defense is good. You're never going to hear me advocate for Lamar Miller against anything except for a terrible rush defense. I'm not a Lamar Miller guy. You ask me for Lamar Miller takes, I'm going to say play somebody else. I don't think he's that good. I think he's not. This Cleveland rush defense is good. I'm sorry for my Kevin Hogan love. He is bad. 4 sacks, 3 interceptions, barely made it through the game. I'm sorry. I don't know what else to say. Detroit, New Orleans, standout stats. Stafford threw 3 pick sixes, one of which was Marshawn Lattimore, which was one of the sickest plays I've ever seen. I kept watching it. I was like, what is going, how did he, it was awesome. It was almost like he was moving backwards. It was so cool. The touchdown to Marvin Jones that Stafford threw, however, was also filthy. Dude had 14 targets. I was bullish on him this week. I knew that there was something there. His role was increasing week to week to week. Golden Tate goes down. He becomes Matthew Stafford's favorite target. I got scared off, but Marvin Jones is a talented, talented wide receiver, and when we have good spots for the Lions, we need to go to him. No doubt about it in my mind. Not one target for Kenny Golladay. Something's up there. TJ Jones is taking his snaps. It's not a thing. Abdullah got plenty of volume in the first half. Very effective. Almost 4 yards per carry. 14 touches, like almost 60 yards. And then he just stopped getting work. And if this team is behind, it's all Theo Riddick. That's the problem here. If they're ahead, I'm going to expect that you're going to see more Abdullah. But he is going to max out only in positive game script. That's the only time that Abdullah is going to be worthwhile. So keep an eye on that, because there's going to be weeks when we can go to him and we can use that to our advantage that other people are saying he hasn't been doing anything chasing the box scores. He's going to score a touchdown this year. Just like I kept saying about Mark Ingram. Mark Ingram is not going to go all year without scoring a touchdown. It's going to happen. Julio Jones is not going to go all year without scoring a touchdown. We have to be ready for these weeks, and we have to be willing to roster these guys, even though they're being hard. It's hard to think of that. New Orleans scored 52 points, and Drew Brees threw for under 190 yards and threw 2 interceptions. What is going on? Really, really weird. Very strange day for Drew Brees. Michael Thomas and Willie Snead had the fewest receiving yards on the Saints. The passing game is very weird, and this was part of the reason why I was slightly bearish on the Saints, because I do believe that the Detroit pass catchers are, or excuse me, the Detroit pass defense is legit, and they proved that they were. They were able to absolutely run the ball straight at their face, but The Detroit pass catchers were legit. And if you don't have 21 points from pick sixes, this team is really actually probably going to struggle a little bit. The New Orleans offensive line, though, absolutely insane. 6+ yards per carry, 58% rushing success rate. Stick that in your pipe and smoke it. Those guys know how to move. Good stuff. Really, really, really excited. But listen, we're going to be ready to go back to Drew Brees here soon. There's going to be some Drew Brees spots. Don't you worry about it. Don't you worry about a thing, as Stevie Wonder would say. Green Bay, Minnesota, standout stats. Rodgers out until at least week 14. That's a standout stat. 7 weeks. Yikes. Nick Hundley, bad. Kevin Hogan, bad. And he didn't even start. 3 INTs and 4 sacks, 55% completion rate. He's not good. He's not good. Maybe he's freaking out. I don't know, but they're going to need to get Aaron Jones involved. He did not get one carry. Time on average, 2.8 yards per carry. Minnesota's rush defense is legit. Legit. They are good from front to back. And this Minnesota team does not suffer with a backup quarterback in the same way that Green Bay suffers with a backup quarterback. Case Keenum has been excellent. I don't think that you right now, Case Keenum's gotten you 2 divisional wins. You can't bench Case Keenum for Teddy Bridgewater, who hasn't played football in a year and a half. You can't. You wait. You let Teddy Bridgewater get into the rhythm of practices. You let him feel good. You let him watch some games. Maybe you get him some snaps here and there. But you do not change. I don't change this if I'm Mike Zimmer. Case Keenum has earned it. They're getting wins in the division. You don't change it, especially now that Rodgers is out. So that's my take here. Thielen, dude runs a 4.4. I did not know that. That's insane. I'm not an Adam Thielen guy, but it's not because, like, you know, it's like I hate white wide receivers or something. It's just because I'm not a Minnesota offense guy. I just never really believed in this offense. Every time I watched, it's like watching paint dry, but they look pretty good. I was actually pretty impressed. 13 full targets and 9 catches, 97 yards for Thielen. He looked very sharp. Rudolph was second on that list in just about 10 targets, and Rudolph looked very good as well. Keenum likes Rudolph. He really does. He's getting him the ball. It's 2 straight games where he had 8+ targets. It's like he doesn't miss a beat. Radford liked him. Rudolph liked him. And Rudolph is a lot like Ertz, a lot like Henry. Excellent hands. Just excellent hands. If he gets a good look, he's going to catch the ball. He made some really impressive catches there. Laquon Treadwell caught all 3 targets that were at him. If Stephon Diggs misses time, there might be a spot or two for Laquon Treadwell in GPPs. I don't know how many people saw the Laquon Treadwell catch. You want to talk about a catch? The Marvin Jones catch was amazing, but Laquon Treadwell literally put a dude on his back and caught a ball with one hand like he was a center, like a basketball center posting somebody up. He put a guy, he screened the Green Bay guy who grabbed his left arm and got called for pass interference, and Treadwell put his right hand out and caught it with one hand, tucked the ball against his body, and then fell down. It was like he was playing post-up. It was like Patrick Ewing. It was awesome. He's good. He's a physical talent. We don't know if he's good yet. Keenum, however, was good. 63% completion rate. Solid numbers across the board. You know, I think they need to leave him in at quarterback. Miami, Atlanta. Listen, we already talked about this Atlanta offense. The red zone belongs to running backs. If for some reason we expected that this was going to change, you're wrong. That's not how this team operates. The red zone in Atlanta belongs to running backs. If you look at how their scoring breaks out, almost 1+ touchdown per game belongs to the rushing game. That's it. Coleman got the touchdown this week. You know, Freeman is going to get those looks. He's gotten them in previous weeks. It's never going to belong to Julio. That's not his role in this offense. It simply isn't going to work. Let's not pretend that it is. But let's also not pretend that Julio's not going to score a touchdown this year. Stupid. It's foolish. Austin Hooper, however, seems to be the man without Sanu out there. 9 targets. I'm blown away by this statistic. 9 carries for Devonta Freeman. I have no idea. The man averaged 7.6 yards per carry. Tevin Coleman had a higher success rate. But Freeman is just so capable of busting off chunk yardage in the same way that like a Lev Bell is. He finds seams, he creates misses, and he busts off. All of a sudden, it's 6, 8, 14 yards rather than 4. You know, he's just so damn talented. So I'm going to be going back to Freeman here. Don't worry about it. 9 touches is not enough. You're going to see that volume bounce right back up. I have no question about this. Jay Ajayi, really, really good stuff. Over 125, I think it was 130 total yards from scrimmage on more than 25 touches. About time they got him going. It's about time we got him going. I'm not going to chase it just yet. I want to make sure that this offensive line is actually playing well and it wasn't just the Atlanta defense. But he had 96 yards after contact. Really interesting. Maybe that offensive line coach was an issue. Maybe it was an issue. Jarvis Landry, 14 total targets. That's bananas. Jay found his guy, right? Parker, who knows when he's going to be back, the ankle. But Landry is the man in the interim. Another touchdown for him on a design play that worked really well. Really, really nice little design play. I'm not going to look too much into this game. Okay, the Atlanta not closing out games against Buffalo and Miami. I'm not sure what to say about that, except for they were supposed to regress. They're regressing in a very, very clear way. Because last year they were so damn good. But we've also seen them score when they're supposed to score. We've seen this team put up points. I don't think that they're incapable of scoring. They did it against Detroit. They did it against Green Bay. I think that they're out of rhythm. I think they have some play calling issues with Sarkisian, and I think that Dan Quinn is going to get this team back on track. As for Miami, I don't know. I mean, how excited can you be about a team that went down 17-0 and, you know, Jay Cutler's 3-2. I hate that stat. New York, New Jersey, key stats. ASJ had 2 touchdowns. That's one key stat. He did not fumble out of the back of the end zone. It was the most absurd call. I can't understand it. If anybody has an article as to why a referee describes what he described, what he saw, please hit me on Twitter. I have no idea what happened. Pat's defense is terrible. That's another key stat. Because listen, here's the thing. McCown threw for 354 total yards. And let's be clear, 3 touchdowns. That was a third touchdown. If he limits the turnovers, they win this game. He had two key interceptions late in the game. And you know what? That's why McCown isn't a great quarterback, right? He's a fine quarterback, but he's not a great quarterback because he had 2 key interceptions in this game. Gillisley fumbled in the first quarter, and he got Belichicked. It's a full committee between him and Lewis. Don't try to predict it. This is the worst possible outcome for Mike Gillisley. For him to now be in a 10-carry split with Deion Lewis is the worst possible outcome. If you thought it was going to be bad when it was, you know, just he was the power guy and James White was the pass catcher and that seemed bad. This is much worse because now we know for a fact that he's going to have only about 10 to 12 touches per game, that they're both going to have about 10 to 12 touches per game. And they're almost the exact same back. They're both averaging very, very efficient 4+ yards per carry because the offensive line is good. Good to see Cook's target share jump up. Brandon Cooks had a nice day of targets. It was interesting to see. But the man that we're going to have to keep going after these pass catchers, Gronk, obviously with the 2 TDs, because this team is going to be behind because the defense is letting them score. They're letting them score quickly. It's definitely going to be a thing throughout the year. New England's defense is going to be a problem for the offense, and these games are going to continue to be high scoring. So it's certainly interesting there. San Francisco, Washington, CJ Beathard. He may make this offense better. He certainly made him better in this game, no doubt about it. But Kirk also, with a couple turnovers, you know, created some issues. The nice thing about C.J. Beathard, I have no idea how to say his name. C.J., old Siege Meister, he's using the same targets as Hoyer did. He's using Kittle. He's using Garcon. He got a deep one to Aldrick Robinson. Fine. Okay. We knew that, you know, Goodwin or Robinson, they're both kind of the same profile. But that is what's nice. Garcon got, you know, 9 full targets. Kittle was right behind him. That's what we wanted to see so that we know it's projectable. really interesting, weird, you know, weird day for Carlos Hyde. Not effective. 13 carries, but two of them right inside the five. Got into the end zone easily. Looked sharp in the red zone. Found seams. Got in there. Kirk on the other side, he was good. Eventually, this is going to stop. And the reason is because if you look at the big Kirk games, they are tied hard to Chris Thompson. Chris Thompson yards after catch are what make Kirk Cousins good. Okay. He had 105 receiving yards. And how many of those were after the catch is, I don't know, but it's probably close to 80 at least. No pass catcher had more than 40 yards. Ryan Grant led all of them with, except for the tight ends. No wide receiver had more than 40 yards. And no other pass catcher had more than five targets, excluding the tight end. So it's a weird balance in this offense that Kirk can't get it to Pryor, Doxson, Crowder. He can't get it to these guys. For whatever reason, this scheme is not getting him there. And he is another guy. There's a couple different offenses that are struggling with new play callers. And it's the Falcons, the Chargers, or not the Chargers, the Falcons, the Raiders, and Washington. And it's they're just not on the same page of their offensive coordinator. The offensive coordinator hasn't figured out how to get them in a spot where it's like, okay, I know how to set up this receiver for success. I know how to set up my quarterback for success. They're just not there yet. So it's kind of an issue. He's their most valuable player, Chris Thompson. He really is. Samaje Perine's not that good. He had the touchdown, but he's not good. He hasn't been able to get himself over 2 yards per carry. When Fat Rob comes back, it's all his. Arizona, Tampa Bay, and actually, you know what? When Fat Rob comes back, this team might actually be better because he might actually be able to draw some linebacking attention. P. Ryan is just, you can stop him with the front four, no doubt about it. It's a good day to be a 30-year-old dude when AP and Larry are out there making us look good. You know, I mean, shout out to the guys from the 80s, born in the 80s. You know, I'm not, like I said, I'm not believing in AP, but I do believe in what he did for the passing game. That is a real, real thing. Palmer went 18 for 22. What a relief for Bruce Arians and Carson Palmer to only have to throw the ball 22 times, only throwing it deep twice. It's a huge, huge burden off of their defense, off of their offense, off of Palmer's arm to be able to control the clock with the running game, get their defense a break. You know, and it kind of came back to bite them in the second half because when the Bucs put the brakes on the rushing game, really, they kept getting the ball back and Fitzpatrick was, you know, just chucking it. And, you know, we are going to continue to come back to slot receivers against the Bucs. Larry went 10 for 11 over 100 yards. They're just allowing too much success. They don't defend passes. The only defender that they have of passes is Brent Grimes. And Brent Grimes is very good. Vernon Hargraves is a problem. The interior slot defense is a problem. It's going to continue to be an issue. Winston went down with a sprained AC joint. I don't know how long it's going to be, but Fitz is definitely going to be the starter next week. Because it was his throwing shoulder. You know, it's interesting. Fitz is actually a good fit for this offense because he looks similar to Winston. Deep throws, he's comfortable attacking tight coverage. He's comfortable attacking his biggest targets and just saying, you go win the ball. He threw the ball at Mike Evans in, you know, kind of difficult situations a couple times. He threw the ball at Cameron Brate in a couple different situations and said, go get it. It certainly seems to be a similar profile of quarterback in the way that they make throws. And that's really nice because I think it's going to allow our guys to continue to be the same, to be valuable again. Doug Martin owns the backfield, no doubt about that. Got a goal line carry, you know, but this rush defense is good. You know, his productivity basically came because he got that one dive in touchdown. But we're definitely going to go back to Doug Martin because he's going to get 15 plus touches, especially if they get positive game script. He's going to get more. If there's any questions about how awesome Patrick Peterson is, let me give you Mike Evans' stats. Mike Evans had four targets while Patrick Peterson was covering him. He had zero catches during those, okay? The other three targets that Mike Evans saw went for 95 yards and a touchdown. That's the difference between Patrick Peterson and the rest of this defense. Brate, absolutely the second best fantasy asset on this team right now. D-Jack's targeted deep three times, twice in the end zone. He is going to have some games where he gets multiple touchdowns because he's going to slip out of coverage and just make plays. And so we have to be ready for those D-Jack's days. It was nice to see one touchdown. I had him, you know, and I was pleased with that for sure. Pittsburgh, Kansas City standout stats here. It's the trend in my mind that stands out more than anything. It's this ridiculous trend by Mike Tomlin to forget that Le'Veon Bell is one of the best running backs in the league and give him less than 15 carries, and then all of a sudden go, you know what, that was my fault. I need to get him more carries, and then give him 35 carries. It keeps happening. It's happened for the entire month of the last month. He had 32 carries. He was absolutely filthy. It's just unbelievable. I mean, watching him run is such a treat. That hesitation move he does where he's like on the hip of the offensive lineman, he kind of squirts and finds a seam, and then pop, takes one good step, makes a linebacker miss, and all of a sudden he's in space. He is so patient in the way that he lets other players overcommit and make mistakes and then reacts to them. It makes you look stupid because you can go 120 miles an hour and it looks like he's going 60, and then all of a sudden all he does is vroom, and he hits the gap, and you're on the floor because you overcommitted. And he does this. He does this to linebackers and safeties all day. Really unbelievable. Almost 200 total, over 200 yards, I believe. Antonio Brown probably made one of the catches of the year. Just ridiculous. Bounced off a Chiefs defender. He caught it on a bobble and then took it to the house. Freak play, you know. But I knew he wasn't going to be denied against this team. He had 10 targets, 9 catches. So you're not going to stop Antonio Brown. You're not going to stop Le'Veon Bell. That's what this offense is built on. That's why Martavis Bryant wants to be traded. Because he's like, I'm not going to be valuable. You need role receivers. I'm not a role receiver. I could be a number one receiver. I'm not a role receiver. I don't want to be a role receiver. Makes sense. He's got to try to make some money. If he doesn't prove his value, I mean, it's not like you just get paid for getting three targets a game. Hunt. The other trend that I notice here is that when teams get gashed, they know it. And they're mad about it. They watch the film. They're disappointed. The coaches know better. They make corrections. They come out and they fix it. That's what happened with Kareem Hunt. They said, we're not going to let Kareem Hunt beat us. We let Fournette beat us last week. We're not going to let Kareem Hunt beat us. We need to tamp down the Kareem Hunt. So they did. Now, they had to pivot and use Kareem Hunt in the passing game. He was very effective there, obviously, because Pittsburgh just kept blitzing. They didn't stop. And Kareem Hunt was extremely effective in that. But you saw the exact same thing happen with the Giants in the Giants game. The Giants said, we got gashed by the run with Melvin Gordon. That's unacceptable. We need to stop the run. So they did. They came out and they stopped C.J. Anderson. You have quality defensive coaches and you have quality defensive players. You're gonna get some stops there. Jogberg pointed out that trend that I was talking about with Lev Bell. That's one of those things that you have to keep your eye on these trends, the ways that these offenses and defenses ebb and flow. Kansas City offense, they struggled. They struggled with the pass rush. If you watch this game, Alex Smith was running for his life at a lot of different points. They gave up 3 sacks. Kansas City, they're not done. And they're not in a, that wasn't a trouble. They're not in trouble, but Pittsburgh really did write the script on how it is that you beat this team. You pressure Alex Smith. You really do. And you let these wide receivers who are not elite necessarily, you say, beat us, you know, and you know, you're not going to let Kareem Hunt beat you. We're not going to let Kareem Hunt beat you. We're not going to let Alex Smith have a clean pocket. Two things. And then we'll let the rest of those guys, you know, Albert Wilson and, you know, if Albert Wilson beats us, fine. Albert Wilson beats us. So it was interesting. Chargers, Raiders, 37 total opportunities for Melvin Gordon. Only fewer than Lev Bell on the total this week. Keenan Allen, that's the problem with this in here. He is he's the one that's going to be hurt by this. Rivers isn't going to force the ball. He's going to dump it to Gordon. And Keenan's, the receptions to Keenan are going to be always going to be slightly more difficult than dumping it to Melvin Gordon 2 yards out in the flat. That's just a fact. And that's why Rivers is going to make the easiest play. That's kind of his game. It's what he'll do. Hunter Henry looked excellent. Some amazing catches, some amazing moves in space. He's been very good in back-to-back weeks. We're going to continue to go to him. On the Oakland side of the ball, I don't know. Lynch was good, but he's not going to get more than 15 carries, and that's what happened. He had 63 rushing yards, but that's it. I mean, that's his ceiling. Carr, not good. I mean, 2 interceptions and only 172 yards. I wish I could tell you what's going on with the Raiders offense. I really do. I have no idea. I read an article about it on SI, and they're saying a lot of it has to do with the fact that the new OC hasn't created the wrinkles and the matchup disadvantages that the previous offensive coordinator was good at creating by moving guys in pre-snap motions, trying to get Crabtree and Cooper on different pieces, safeties, linebackers, things of that nature to create big play opportunities. Seems to make sense. I don't watch Oakland film religiously, but they're definitely in an offensive slump, and that's a problem when you have passing weapons such as these. Jacksonville, LA. Oh, that opening rush from Leonard Fournette was awful nice. I'm not going to lie. It was very nice to start out your day with a 75-yard touchdown on your running back one win, especially when you had Kareem Hunt as the running back two. Fournette is an animal, but this is back-to-back weeks where a lot of his fantasy scoring hinges on one 80-yard rush to the house. That's not sustainable. He's a running back one. He's always capable of going to the house. The problem is that those plays are not going to continue in the same way that they haven't continued for Kareem Hunt. They're going to regress. They're going to slow down. So if you want to be bearish on Fournette for, you know, a couple next weeks and say, I'm going to be careful here, that's fine. I mean, we saw what Todd Gurley did. He was very good, 24 touches, but 113 yards. That's not necessarily exactly what you want from a fantasy running back. And what I think we're going to see is Fournette probably in line for some weeks like that. 24 or 22 touches, 100 plus yards, maybe no touchdown, maybe no big 70-yard run, right? Those things are hard to predict. They're not predictable. They're not projectable. The volume is projectable. The breakaway runs are really nice, but they're not predictable. So if you want to be bullish, or excuse me, if you want to be bearish on Fournette, I understand. The thing that I'm also very bearish on is you've got to attach your other fantasy assets to decent quarterback play. You cannot have a quality fantasy performance from if you have shit quarterback play. When in doubt, make sure that the quarterback is competent. Just say, I'm playing this guy because at least I know his quarterback is good. Right? I mean, that's half the battle here, right? Competent quarterback play. It's very, very difficult to trust Leonard Fournette at times with because they don't trust Bortles. And so every time Fournette is in the backfield, teams just pin their ears back and they go straight at Fournette. They know for sure. As far as the Rams go, Gurley was very good. 24 touches. We're going to keep targeting rushers against Jacksonville. We should keep looking at Todd Gurley. You know, in certain situations, he's going to get upward of 25, 30 touches. So definitely interested in him. Sammy Watkins has a role here. Deep ball targets, half of which, you know, those are half of his targets. There's going to be Sammy Watkins spots, and we're going to have to watch for him because he's just too talented, and they know, and McVay knows what he has in him, and Goff knows how to look for him, and nobody throws the ball more deep than Jared Goff. They just didn't have to throw much in this game. You know, they really, really, really tamped it down and kept it easy. Robert Woods, though, has been the leading receiver for this team in a couple different situations. Watkins, though, I'm keeping my eye on him. I'm going to try to find some spots for him for sure. Moving on to Sunday night, last but not least, this is about all you need to know about Sunday night. I said, we put the kids to bed. My wife was like, who's the Sunday night game you want to watch? And I was like, do you want to watch football? And she's like, honestly, I'd rather watch that Netflix show that we've been watching. Show recommendation. You guys want to plug? I'll get you a series. So it's kind of addicting. It's not, you know, amazing, but it's good. Miniseries on the FBI's investigation and tracking of the Unabomber in the 90s. It's on Discovery. It was on Discovery, and it's called Manhunt. It's all about forensic linguistics. I got trapped in that this weekend. And my wife was like, yeah, I'm in. So we watched that instead. It's kind of good. I'm kind of glad we didn't watch the Denver New York game, 'cause it was terrible and I had no problem. And she was like, I would rather watch that. I was like, you got it, hon. I watched Red Zone all day. This is a disaster though. I mean, what? Half of Eli's completions, he had 11 completions. They went to Ingram. The freaking best rush defense in the league got gashed by Orleans Darkwa for over 120 yards. The freaking Giants led up 376 yards passing to Trevor Siemian, but just one touchdown. Wow. I have no idea how CJ Anderson performed so badly. 9 touches, 17 yards. No clue. No idea. For him to have gone from so good to so bad only can be spoken. The only thing you can suggest is that the Giants defense figured out exactly what the issue was with their rush, their rushing defense, and they just said, this is the problem. Don't let it happen. I don't know. And I think the other thing you realize is that anything can happen in an NFL football game. Nothing is sacred. These guys are going to go out there and compete, no doubt. So that's it, man. That was crazy. I don't think there's a lot to learn from it, except for that the Giants offense is going to be much more conservative and go through the running game now and through the tight end, which, you know, is probably nice for Eli so he doesn't get hit so much. And maybe this Giants offensive line isn't as bad as we thought they were. They've just never been able to run the ball, and that exposes them to sacks. But Denver bounce back week coming. Denver bounce back coming, no doubt about it. That's it for me, guys. Hey, player breakdown, game-by-game breakdown coming up this week. So go ahead and keep it locked on here. If you haven't written a review, please do so. And thank you again for tuning in to Lineup Lost.